Wait just a minute, please. Everybody gets settled. All right. The argument from petitioner.
May it please the court, Mr. Donald M. Hunt will present argument for the petition.
May it please the court, I'm Don Hunt with the firm of Carr Evans Faustin Hunt of Lubbock. My appearance today is on behalf of the petitioner, B.D. Click Company Incorporated, the appellant and defendant below. Respondents are Safari Drilling Corporation and Mohawk Mud Company, the appellees and claimants in the lower courts. This is an appellate review case. Judgment was rendered against Click by the trial court. Click attempted to appeal, but it tendered the transcript and statement of facts for filing to the clerk of the Court of Appeals on February 23, 1981, some 41 days late. Click had not at that point in time attempted to file a motion for extension of time pursuant to Rule 21C. However, Click at that point in time did file a motion pursuant to the amended language of Rule 386 asking the Court of Appeals to consider the late record. The Court of Appeals eventually declined to consider the later record and dismissed. Writ was granted by this court on three points of error, which collectively may be stated in the form of a single question. Does the Court of Appeals, after January 1981, have discretion pursuant to the amended language of Rule 386 to fully consider a late record without a 21C motion for extension of time? A terse review of the facts introduces the answer which Click urges this court to adopt. These facts are best considered by looking at the key dates and the events that occurred on those dates. Provided for the court is an exhibit showing those dates and the events. Reflected on that exhibit is the first date of September 12, 1980, the date on which the judgment was signed. Approximately 60 days later, on November 14, 1980, the amended motion for new trial was overruled by written order. 5 days later, on November 19, 1980, appeal was perfected pursuant to Rule 363 by the filing of a cash bond. Since the appeal was perfected under the 1980 rules, pursuant to those rules, the transcript and statement of facts should have been filed on January 13, 1981. The record, however, was not so filed or tendered. Transcript and statement of facts, in fact, were tendered to the clerk of the Court of Appeals on February 23, 1981, some 41 days after the January 13 deadline. At that point in time, the clerk of the Court of Appeals indicated that Click needed to do something else. Click understood this something else as a motion pursuant to Rule 386. Click then on February 27, 1981, filed a motion requesting the Court of Appeals to consider the late record. That motion was filed on February 27. The court acted on that motion on March 12, 1981. The late record was filed. Promptly thereafter, briefs were filed in due order, except one of the appellees requested and received an extension of time to file its brief. Afterwards, the case was submitted on the merits in due order. The Court of Appeals, however, declined to decide the merits and sua sponte dismissed and held in essence that the discretion granted by Rule 386 to a Court of Appeals to consider a late record was limited to those 15 days prescribed in Rule 21C, after which the Court of Appeals had no discretion except to either dismiss the case or to affirm it. It is from this judgment and holding that Click urges error. Click answers that Rule 386 and those other rules that were amended in 1981 must have some more meaning or else they're nullities. The genesis of this case and the problem it creates is, of course, with those amendments to the appellate rules in 1981. Rule 386 was amended for the first time to provide that the failure to file the transcript and statement of facts within the time limits prescribed in that rule shall not affect the jurisdiction of the court to consider the material filed late. Now, that rule, however, and the amendment must be read in conjunction with Rule 21C. Since 1976, that rule has provided that if an appellant desiring to file a transcript or statement of facts late must file a motion reasonably explaining the need for the extension of time within 15 days of the deadline. Additionally, Rule 437 should be consulted. The language in the latter part of that rule indicates that no enlargement of time can be granted to file a statement of facts or a transcript except pursuant to Rule 21C. It was these rules, Rule 21C and Rule 437 on the one hand, and the amended language in Rule 386, which the Court of Appeals in this case saw as creating a real conflict. The Court of Appeals in this instance resolved the conflict in favor of 21C and 437, holding as indicated that the discretion was limited to 15 days, after which the judgment must be affirmed or dismissed. Now, at the same time, the Court of Appeals in this case was resolving that conflict. The Dallas Court of Appeals was likewise faced with a similar problem. The panel consisting of Mr. Justice Cotard, Mr. Justice Stevens, and Mr. Justice Story heard the case of Wallace against TEIA. It is that case which states the position of Click almost in toto. In Wallace, the court first observed that the purpose of these amendments that occurred in January of 1981 was to abolish the harsh jurisdictional limitations that provided for so many dispositions unrelated to the merits. Now, in support of that proposition, the Wallace opinion cited Judge Barrow's article in the St. Mary's Law Journal. Immediately following that recitation of the reason for these amendments, the court in Wallace quoted Rule 386. Then Wallace held, "We interpret this rule as giving the appellate court discretion to consider untimely material or to refuse to consider it." The court then added that this interpretation of Rule 386 of granting discretion was confirmed by the other amendments. The court first noted that Rule 487 was amended. That formerly it was a rule that provided for affirmance on a certificate where a transcript was not filed, but now was a general rule providing for the procedure for affirmance or dismissal for any failure to comply with the rules or the order of the court.
Counsel, when would you suggest that a judgment would become final, that you know that the judgment is final?
This, of course, is the difficult problem. Recently, in exposition handed down recently by the Austin Court of Appeals, that court addressed in the concluding paragraphs that very problem and indicated that there prejudice to the appellee was such that the appellee was entitled to know within a few days whether there was an appeal going forward, and that's the harm that must be considered in each case. There is no hard and fast line that can be drawn. Click urges the rationale under Wallace be adopted to this court. conflict, however, recognizes that that rationale doesn't fix the line that you seek. Because the Click rationale, drawn from the Wallace opinion, simply relies on discretion and measuring that discretion against the lapse of time and the reasonable explanation that may be provided for the late record. So the answer to the question is that the Click can give this court no line. Click can only say that once the time for filing the transcript passes, once the 15-day limit on 21C passes, that the appellant risk every day of not filing that record. But the reason why there can be no hard and fast line was also noted in the exposition case, where it said the problem can occur oftentimes when a party or the counsel has died. And that's the best explanation. If an attorney has died in the process of compiling that record and getting it to the Court of Appeals, the litigant should not be prejudiced by that death, even though the litigant may not find out about that death until weeks after the 21C deadline has passed. Of course, there's a similar problem here. The then counsel for Click, Joanne Strauss, at the moment in time she should have been perfecting this appeal, was faced with very serious personal problems. Her motion to consider the late record pursuant to Rule 386 indicated that at that point in time she was facing severe mental and physical problems that required her hospitalization. So at the point in time when she should have been doing something in this case, for all practical purposes, it was the same as if her mind was taken from her. She was unable to function because of physical and mental problems and hospitalization. So this is similar, Mr. Justice Barrett, to a party or the counsel being dead. Well, certainly Joanne Strauss is not dead today, and was able eventually to recover to the point that she filed a brief in the case on the merits. At the point in time in January and February when something should have been done about the record going to the Court of Appeals, her motion indicates she was unable to function. And that's the problem. Why, in some cases, the explanation of why the record is not filed may be so grievous and severe that an exact line cannot be drawn. And answering that question, the position, in fact, in Wallace and the position of Click has in large measure been presented, that instead of the conflict that this court, or that the Court of Appeals in this case saw, the Wallace opinion resolved the conflict on the basis that 21C granted to an appellant, if the appellant procedurally complied with Rule 21C, a right to an extension. Well, on the other hand, Rule 386 grants discretion to the court to consider a record filed late. Wallace's opinion then concluded that there was no conflict between 21C and 386. Click would urge, in addition, that there's no conflict between 386 and 437 for the same reason. One is a matter of right. One is a matter of discretion. The discretion should be exercised under the Wallace rationale. If that discretion is exercised here, then the case should be reversed and remanded to the Court of Appeals to permit that court to fully consider and exercise its discretion that it deemed it did not have. Although it should be noted, of course, that it initially decided to permit the filing of the record. But, of course, should this court reverse and adopt such a construction as urged here by Click, it doesn't solve the problem entirely for Click. The question must be asked, does this standard, as urged in Wallace, actually help Click in this case? Is it enough? Click urges that it is, in part because of the facts reviewed about the severe circumstances faced by the counsel then representing Click, and in part because of the Wallace rationale that what a court of appeals must do is look and see, as a bottom line, if there's a reasonable explanation for the late filing. Then if there is a reasonable explanation for the late filing, consider how late it is and consider whether there's prejudice or harm to the other party. Now, that's critical here.
Well, didn't this court do that? They granted your motion to sign stand first and then dismissed it later.
Yes, Judge McGee.
So they've exercised their discretion.
Yes, in that sense, the court has. It exercised it twice, once in Click's favor, once against Click's favor. But the point here is that the appellees didn't object when the motion was filed. Appellees didn't come forward and say there was any prejudice or harm to the appellees. Instead, the appellant, Click, and the appellees went forward on filing the briefs. About the only thing that delayed the submission of the case was that appellee Mohawk, Mudd, asked for a short extension of time to file his brief. Once granted, once the briefs were filed, the case was submitted, and the decision handed down in June. So the record should have been filed in mid-January. The decision was made in June. Dispatch for any court of appeals. So the merits could have as well have been decided as when this case was dismissed. And this is the reason why there can be no prejudice, no harm to the appellees. In short, because the counsel for Click then was facing severe personal problems, physical illness, mental illness, hospitalization. She was unable to comply with the filing, unable to comply with Rule 21C.
Counsel, was Click not assisted by counsel?
Joanne Strauss was the counsel of record for Click, Mr. Chief Justice.
Well, assuming personal illness of the client, how about the lawyer?
No, the Joanne Strauss
Whoever
is the attorney.
Whoever it is. You're arguing that somebody was sick and therefore it ought to be different. Doesn't that person have a lawyer, right?
No, the lawyer was sick.
The lawyer was sick. Joanne Strauss, the attorney representing Click, was ill. This is the analogy drawn to death. While certainly Joanne Strauss was not deceased and is not now, at the point in time she should have been perfecting appeal. She was mentally and physically disabled on the care of a doctor and hospitalized, and for that reason was unable to go forward. Additionally, there was a problem that the court reporter indicated to Ms. Strauss that he was unable to complete the statement of facts and would secure an extension of time. Her motion under Rule 386 indicated that the court reporter had said he would secure the extension of time. As unbelievable as that is, apparently Ms. Strauss believed it and failed to do anything to see if the court reporter had secured the extension. If the court reporter had secured the extension promise, then this record would have been tendered to the Court of Appeals during the 15-day time limit of 21C.
Counsel, what would this be the situation where the lawyer was just negligent or incompetent as opposed to being physically ill?
It would permit Justice Wallace, the Court of Appeals, to look and see what was stated in the 386 motion. Now, if the lawyer merely says, I was negligent, I goofed, then the Court of Appeals should deny relief there. After all, this is reason for 21C. Take care of the situation when an attorney calculates the days, has a mishap in his office, or misses a deadline.
Other cases to work on this week.
That's not insufficient, Mr. Chief Justice.
I've got 10 cases to work on this week.
Certainly there would be a point in time where it would be impossible for the lawyer to function, but that's not present in this case.
Well, as I read the Wallace opinion, though, the rationale, the way they reconciled those two rules was by saying that if you timely file a 21C, the CCA should grant it. But the rule requires you to timely file it and reasonably explain. And that's what you have to do under the 387 and also the 386. You still have to reasonably explain it.
So this is an answer to Justice Wallace's question. If there's a reasonable explanation, there must still be something more. An absence of prejudice, a short period of time, and some good reason why the record wasn't there before. So Click would urge this court to look at the amended language of 386 and to give it meaning. Because if the reasoning of the Court of Appeals in this case is adopted, then Rule 386 as amended virtually has no meaning.
As I understand, then, your theory would be that the longer the lawyer waited to file a late 21C, the more explanation you're going to have to give for being late.
Exactly. That, as suggested in the exposition, Click doesn't argue this, but the exposition case suggests that when a lawyer knew the lawyer needed to file a 21C motion and didn't, that would cut the lawyer off entirely. That again erects some barriers, some hurdles. It reinstitutes the good cause thinking. Rather than have any sort of situation where lawyers must leap hurdles and meet this deadline, or it would be much easier, it seems, to Click for the Court of Appeals to have a situation of discretion. The longer the delay, the more unreasonable the explanation, cut the appellant off. But if there is a reasonable explanation, and if there's no prejudice, no harm, then fully consider it.
Would you have a deadline past which no explanation would be accepted?
Certainly, Justice Wallace, there would be one reached on a case-by-case basis, just as there was under old 386 and the good cause standard. But this is a matter that cannot be, it seems to Click, definitely stated and say, this line is it. Now, of course, there must reach a point. It can't go on for a year, 2 years, and the line must creep back when it's eventually drawn on a case-by-case basis to a very few days past the 21C motion. Happily, we're not really faced with drawing that ultimate line here. All that needs to be said in this case is that under these facts, the Court of Appeals had discretion to consider the attorney's physical and mental illness and grant relief and hear the record. Consider the record filed late, when the lateness, a short period of time, and the lateness was accompanied by a reasonable explanation. And no prejudice and no harm. So Click urges that the case be reversed and remanded. It be concluded that if 386 is to have any meaning, that it give full discretion to the Court of Appeals to consider a late record without a 21C motion, or else the harsh jurisdictional limitations of the old law remain the law.
Counsel, are there any guidelines that this court could set up that would keep us from getting an appeal in every one of these cases?
Judge Ray, of course there are guidelines, but again, as with good cause under old 386, it would appear to be impossible to decide those guidelines in this case. It must be on a case-by-case basis, and the case will be reached where this court will say, that's too far, that's too long.
Well, that's what this court did. They granted you permission to come in, then they heard it, and they dismissed it. Now, if we said that it's within your discretion, let it go on with it, I don't doubt if we'd have a field.
That's correct.
But they didn't.
But of course the answer to that, Judge McGee, is that that court applied a rule that said there were last 15 days, except to dismiss or affirm. Now that's the rule of law that's being contested here, exercise of the discretion. Courts indicated which way it would go if it felt free to exercise its discretion. But feeling, because of the NRE in Briscoe, that it was not free to exercise its discretion, it made a ruling on the law. So again, Click urges that the discretion be given under Rule 386, or else there's a return to the old law.
Thank you, counsel, for the argument from the respondent.
Yes, please, the court, Mr. Charles Scarborough, will present argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, I'm Charles Scarborough. Practice law in Abilene with the firm of Scarborough Black Carpenter and Scarborough. Counsel, I think, correctly stated generally the nature and results of the case. Judge Barrow pierced the center of this case with his first question, when is this case final? 21C says, we're giving you fellas and ladies that practice law out there a chance if you screw up for 15 days to remedy the error. And I refer to this as a Kronzer rule. I understand that he urged this back before because of the harshness of not meeting this time. And so if you made a mistake, if you were 20 minutes late or a day late, we're going to give you 15 extra days. Now this is after you've already fouled up and missed the time. So it gave the people a chance, the lawyers in this state, to correct their error. And at that point, if you didn't get it filed within 15 days, it was final. Now they're saying do away with 21C. Just mark it off the book. Take it away. And at some point out there, this thing will become final. That's what they're asking you to do. Don't draw the line. Don't tell the lawyers that practice in this state when it is. And that's what they're saying. Because they're saying, in this case, 41 days is not too long. Now that's 26 days after 21C.
Did you question the fact that the attorney was ill or?
I don't know, Judge. She said she was having marital difficulties in her motion that caused mental and physical illness, including a hospitalization. That's all we know. I can't dispute it or confirm it or anything else. I frankly don't know. She did get a divorce, I know that. That's not in the record.
She did what?
She did get a divorce, I know that, but that's was after this case, but subsequently. So I can't confirm that or speak to it at all.
This lawsuit really concerns what the rule of law is, not how we apply it in this case. As I understand, the Court of Civil Appeals has ruled that there is no discretion if there is no filing of a 21C within the 15 days. And unfortunately, we have a rule that conflicts with that because it says that late filing of the transcript statement of facts is not jurisdictional. Now, isn't that our problem? We've just got two rules that conflict with each other.
Yes, sir, I think so. The 386, where it says that it shall not be jurisdictional, the Eastland Court did not say they didn't have jurisdiction. That's not what they said. That opinion doesn't say that at all. The Austin opinion says that's what the Eastland opinion says. But in fact, the Eastland opinion says that they are limited by the rules. It's not jurisdictional. Problem. They don't lack jurisdiction. They are limited by 21C. And 21C does, according to our interpretation, say the case is over at that point.
Well, is it your position that the failure to file the motion, the 21C motion within 15 days, that at that time there was no power in the court to grant leave to file the late statement of facts?
They had the jurisdiction, I believe, Your Honor, but not the authority under the rules. Now, I know that's a fine distinction.
Well, did they have the power? Could they have, after 15 days, ordered, we're going to let you file the statement of facts?
They could.
Now, that's the position that you take.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
Then we're right back to where we were under Matlock versus Matlock.
That's correct. Except you now, with 21C, have
15 days.
Extra days.
And there's and you some, show a reasonable explanation instead of a good cause.
That's right. And there's a difference there, too, a substantial difference. The reasonable explanation is, Your Honors, I miscalculated, I made a mistake, I fouled up.
Well, we don't have any difficulty on administering 21C and what is a good cause. We do that daily. But if we decide this case the way you're saying, at the end of 15 days, no motion for extension of time, that's it.
That's right. You've messed up once, you had an extra 15 days to correct your error, you've had your extra chance, we aren't going to give you another chance.
What do you do with that provision in Rule 386 which says that the late filing of statement of facts and the transcript is not jurisdictional?
Well, again, I realize that it's a fine distinction to try to draw between jurisdiction and being limited by the other rule and having the authority to act. But that's the best I can do with that problem. I realize it's a problem.
It's just an unfortunate conflict that you lawyers didn't create. We were trying to amend the rules and we didn't complete our job.
Maybe we'll get 15 days to correct it.
Maybe so, Your Honor. According to their theory, of course, we think it's very important, the finality. This is a critical bottom line policy that this court has to grapple with, because if you don't, how are we out there practicing law and the clients going to know how to respond? For instance, we have a divorce. We get the divorce granted and a big property settlement with a lot of money and assets involved. And the other side files their bond or their cash in lieu of bond timely. And the client comes to me and says, Mr. Scarborough, it's now been 60 days. The other side has not, have they done anything? You told me they had to file their statement of fact within 60 days. And I said, well, they got 15 more days because there may be a problem in there. And he says, okay, I'll wait my time. I've got a business deal I need to commit cash to. I need to get back into the swing of my business. I don't want to take a chance on this divorce going back and my wife getting in on my good deal coming up. In the 15 days, what do I tell him? Do I say, well, there is a reasonable time at some point in the future at which time this case may come back at you? If you have a title problem to land, can you ever tell that client, whether it's 2 weeks or 41 days or 60 days or 60 years later, that title is good?
Of course, counsel, those are the arguments in support of the rule that 21C was designed to get away from. That was the old Matlock rule. In the hearing for the advisory committee, at least there was some thought that there's not but one jurisdictional requirement, and that's to file that bond on time. And that the appellate court would run its docket the same way the trial court runs its docket. That is, that there are not these arbitrary time limits.
Yes, sir, I understand that. I'm suggesting to the court that there are two problems. One is the bond or the cash thereof to get the appeal started. And the second is to get the transcript to the court. Because the court cannot act until they get the transcript and statement of fact. Until they get that transcript, there's nothing for them to act on. And if they have the discretion at some point in the future...
Well, it's not as wide open as you might indicate. The appellee can file a motion to affirm on certificate. And he can file a motion that the case be dismissed. Or the court can do this. Or the appellee can call on the court to exercise its discretion. And a big thing coined for the appellee is the failure to file a 21C. But the question is it jurisdictional, as the Court of Civil Appeals says, or the court has no power except to make one decision.
All right. Now, I would submit to the court then that under the open-ended rule, it is to the appellee's advantage not to make such a motion until the longest time possible. Because the longer it goes, according to counsel's arguments, the better chance we have to be sure that we win and they don't get their record filed late. So it's to our advantage not to jump in there the day the 15 days are up, because they say, gee, I made a mistake, or whatever.
Then the appellee's not being hurt, being benefited.
That's right. So let's how many days am I going to try to play the game to see where this particular court of appeals is going to draw the line? I submit to the court that we need to have a decision which will say the case is final at this point in time. And the 21C is a harsh rule. But you can expand that. You can rewrite that rule. You can say we will give 30 days. Now that's not only the first 60, that's another 30. You can do that. Or you can write some arbitrary rule with the case.
And then apply the old Matlock rule.
And apply the old Matlock rule. Yes, sir. Now I realize
that... Well, I had a reasonable explanation to it.
Sir?
Why go back to the harsh Matlock of good cause? Why not apply the reasonable explanation to this proposed rule you're talking about?
To the 21C?
Right. I don't, 21C changed to Matlock by going to reasonable explanation instead of good cause.
And that's true. It made it much easier, obviously. And I think the cases bear that out, that just about anything is a reasonable explanation. And it should be. That 15 days, I have no problem with that. I really don't. I think that ought to be easy. In case there is a foul-up, you give them an extra 2 weeks to correct it. And they just have to file a motion. Those have generally been granted. The exposition case, under the facts in it, that one, now, you know, what we're talking about, let's get down to the bottom line. We're talking about lawyer's incompetence. That's what we're really talking about.
So it's also malpractice.
Yeah, yes, also sir. Court reporters.
Yes, sir. That's a problem, too. But if the lawyer knows and is keeping time up with just two things, that's all we're asking that he keep up with. One, to file his bond or his cash in lieu of thereof to get it started. And one, to file, either get his transcript filed or file a motion. Now, that's not too hard. That's not a trap. And I realize we don't want to set traps for the unwary. We don't want to cut off the rights of the litigants because a lawyer fouls up. And I realize that. That's an important consideration. I grant you that. That's why 21C is there, to prevent that thing.
Well, I voted for 21C along with everybody else. I'm not sure it's a good rule. Everybody can speak for himself, but it's caused as many problems as it used to. Varying degrees between, I'm too busy this week, and my husband's threatening with me for divorce.
The exposition case talks about the death of a party. I, for the life of me, can't see why the lawyer, even if his client dies, can't go ahead and file his transcript and statement of facts, or file a motion for an extension. To me, the reasoning in the exposition case doesn't make sense in that regard. The death of a lawyer, that could pose a problem, but that party has an obligation, too. He's going to know that his or her lawyer died, and has some responsibility to do something with their case. Well, you know, what about the party on the other side of this? The party, in this case, the plaintiff, that goes out and gets a $100,000 judgment, and the other side starts their appeal, and they don't miss the 21C time. They miss it by 3 weeks, 26 days. What about that party? I think those are considerations, too, that this court has to wrestle with in dealing with this rule. I realize the court has a real problem with the incompetent counsel that doesn't get its transcript filed. And I know that 21C has been an attempt to protect the public from their own lawyer. And I realize that. But we've got to go in here and balance that need with the finality and the problems of ending the appeal. The appeal has to end sometime. And whether or not we refer to it as the harshness of the pre-existing 21C rule, we've got to have a time when we say to our clients and to the public, you now have good title of that land. You now have your divorce. You now can go forward with your business. This case is over. And if we allow this case to have a reasonable time in the future, we can't ever do that. And certainly in the case at bar, we've gone 26 days past the 21C time. I mean, that's way too long, even under the exposition case, under their language. And where they get that several weeks, I don't know. But even under the exposition case, this case would be, they would not allow the filing of that transcript.
I agree with what you're saying. And all the Court of Civil Appeals has to say is, in the exercise of our discretion, we're not going to grant leave to file the statement of facts. And that's the end of the whole thing. But the Court of Civil Appeals didn't say that.
That's true.
The Court of Civil Appeals says, it being 26 days, we can't file the statement of facts.
And I would suggest to the court that even if you go with the Wallace rule and say that we are going to give a reasonable time in the future, either with good cause
or with reasonable explanation that this case doesn't fit the mold.
But under your argument, if the motion, if the 21C motion is filed on the 16th day instead of the 15th day, nobody can handle that case. It's over.
That's right. It is final. It is disposed of. But I'm saying if you don't adopt that opinion, if you go the other way and you follow the Wallace opinion and say you have a reasonable time thereafter, if you've got either good cause or a reasonable explanation, as this court might decide, that this case doesn't fall into it because 26 days after the 21C time is too long.
That may be very well so, but that's really not the legal point that we, the hard point that we have to decide.
I understand, Your Honor. I understand. That first one is, do we cut it off at the 15-day time after 21C? And I'm saying you should. But I'm saying further that if you find against me on that one, even if you find that there should be a reasonable time, this case still doesn't fit the mold. It's gone too far.
That's a much easier case than the first one.
Well, I understand that. I'm trying to win either way, Your Honor, and I'll take it either way.
I understand, but we've got to cross that first bridge.
I understand that, Your Honor. And I, again, when I balance the two underlying criteria that I think are the real hard issue, and I think you're right, Your Honor. I think you're dead right in that you hit the nail on the head on that question of finality. And that's, as I said to begin with, that is the underlying policy. And we can talk all day about the Austin case or the San Antonio case or any of these others. We've got to decide the underlying philosophical question.
At some point in time, you've got to issue an execution.
That's right. And
somebody, you've got to know when that is.
That's exactly right. And I would submit that that's the real hard issue, the number one issue. And I would say to the court that the 15C rule is a reasonable rule. Now, Your Honor, you may be right. I'm not familiar with all the cases and problems that come up under 21C.
Well, we get a dozen or more every week. And the degree of reasonableness is A to Z. I've got a headache. I've got a brain tumor. You almost get into a government of men and not a government of laws. You just don't know what.
I understand. I think the finality question is the bottom line question that we must decide. And then the second one is easier. And I would submit to the court that you've got to have the finality in the 21C. You ought to go ahead and set the deadline. I would merely say that... Well,